This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
If there was a moment that epitomized the NFC Championship game for me, if you're going to ask me to distill it down to one single play, it's very easy for me. It's not Raheem Mostert running in from the outside and scampering 30 yards for a touchdown, and it's not Jimmy Garoppolo handing off, which is pretty much all he did in that game. The one moment is Aaron Rodgers under center, taking the snap, coming away from center without the ball, and then kind of just watching as a little mosh pit develops over. I don't know if the center snapped the ball into his own butt. It certainly looked like Rodgers' hands were there. The ball was not in his hands when he came out, and I'm going to say that he must have seen that San Francisco fell on it right away and that there was no point in diving in there, because that step right there where they had actually had a big play down the field, one of the only plays they had in the first half, but that was it. The lack of competitiveness was in full display on that single play.
Aaron Cutler after the game said that football was fun again, but in that situation for Aaron Cutler, it was not. And as you noticed, I said Aaron Cutler because I don't think he cares enough.
The joke's not as good when it's not as good when you explain. If you would just let it hang there, if you would have just let it hang there for a second. Cut number one, when Aaron Rodgers did say this, I admit I fully enjoyed watching him be defrocked publicly, and to not have any, there can't be any. Oh, it's the coach this time, right? Because that's kind of been the undercurrent over the last 3 or 4 years, and this whole sense of did the Packers win enough while having the best quarterback in the league and making the playoffs every single, did they win enough to pay that off? And Mike McCarthy ends up losing his job after they missed the playoffs in 2 straight years, and they get back to the NFC Championship game and they lose in the conference championship for the 3rd straight time, and here was Aaron Rodgers searching for a silver lining afterward.
The beauty in this sport is it is a true team sport. You're relying on so many other people. As we move into the off season now, the reliance is on guys doing their responsibilities, doing their part to be ready for next season. And who knows what can happen. It's a long year, but this one will always be special because it became fun again.
Their responsibility, their part, except when you muff the snap and the ball's right in front of you in a do-or-die game.
That part, and look, who knows what's happened, and he might have just not been in position to get to it. But if there was something that I enjoyed, that I did enjoy watching him getting taken to the house. Jimmy Graham is a frustrating player, as my wife says. I hate it when he makes plays. I hate it when he doesn't. Anytime his name is mentioned, it basically raises ire. He's a weird player in Seattle because he was actually pretty productive. And he's the best receiving tight end in the franchise's history. Yet anybody who watched it knew that that was a square peg, round hole situation, that they were in some ways worse off for having him because of what he couldn't do and what they failed to recognize that he couldn't do, or however you want to say it, whether it was a Ferrari towing a boat or it was a Fiero that just wasn't ready for contact. There's all sorts of that. Green Bay team is pretty tough to, and watching them get the ball ran down their throats, honestly, is frustrating because you wonder why Seattle was so incapable of doing it the week before. And maybe that's as simple as they were down to their 4th string running back at that point in the season, and their offensive line was banged up with no Mike Iupati and Dwayne Brown playing less than 3 weeks after knee surgery.
It certainly could have been that. But yeah, that there was a lot of frustrating to come out of this weekend as opposed to taking glee in the misfortune of Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, I loved it myself. I mean, Aaron Rodgers in the greatest of all time quarterback conversation officially died yesterday. Done. I mean, now you have to debate whether or not he's the best Packer quarterback of all time, right? So when you look at this, there's that at least that comes out of it. But for the rest of the weekend, it's just, man, Kansas City's offense, when they pass the ball like that, couldn't Seattle be close to that? I know some people were telling themselves that. And then it's San Francisco doing exactly what Seattle did, but just way better and way more intricately.
Did you find yourself feeling that Seattle should have been there in that sort of sense? I felt that way to a certain extent, but I also felt they had no one to blame but themselves. In the
That's
sense
true.
Of, it wasn't like this sort of sense of, man, they really got denied the opportunity. They had the chance. They could have done that to Green Bay, and they really didn't come that close to being that dominant against Green Bay. And in fact, they followed a script that we've seen now 5 different times under Pete Carroll that doesn't work. You dig that big a hole on the road in the playoffs, and you're going to lose. That's if you dig that big a hole on the road in the playoffs, at home maybe you can come back and erase it, but you dig that big a hole in the first half in the playoffs, you're going to lose.
You had so many opportunities against this version of Aaron Rodgers, who was an above-average quarterback, not one of the greats in the game, in so many third and long situations. And your defense just pooped it away every single time. And specifically, that third and nine and third and eight on the last drive of the game, that you couldn't get a stop in either of those situations. And maybe you did on the Jimmy Graham catch and run, whatever. That is the worst part of all, because it was there for you. For all those people that wanted to see the Seahawks go for it on that 4th and 11, too, okay, well, maybe it's a 4th and more manageable if Russell Wilson is able to pick up the fact that Jacob Hollister's trying to block Preston Smith on the edge. Maybe things are a little bit differently. Maybe Russ throws it away, he runs up, and he makes it a little bit more manageable, 4th and 5. There were so many chances in just that specific moment, and it felt like the game had just been building to a crescendo where it would be Russell Wilson scoring a game-winning touchdown in the closing minute, and it didn't happen. And, yeah, it is their fault. It is their fault that they were not in that game. And I think you can look at Green Bay and give them credit for the victory, but Green Bay shouldn't have been in that game. That was my real feeling coming out of it. They did not belong in the NFC Championship.
But it's not like Seattle was more worthy of being included. I agree with you. I think that Green Bay was showed to be that is not – they're a step below. Like, you play that game against San Francisco 10 more times, and there's maybe one fluky one where the Packers win. But the San Francisco 49ers are clearly the better team. But I didn't feel that Seattle was eminently more worthy of being there. I think it would have been more competitive. But that's on them. That's they lost their final two regular season games and lost the chance to be the number one seed.
Yep.
And they dug themselves that hole in the first round. And for everything you would say about like Green Bay kind of being fraudulent, well, they had all of those warts. Seattle had every bit the same amount of warts as well, and it's the reason that they didn't get there. The other game, I did feel good before the game started. I made the calculated decision of, okay, I'm rooting for Kansas City as my fallback option. I think that Kansas City is eminently more capable of beating San Francisco in the Super Bowl than Tennessee. I think in that matchup, like Kansas City, I absolutely want Kansas City to win, even though in those situations, I feel like generally when you have no rooting interest or no specific interest, you should root for the underdog. Like that's American, right? That if all things being equal, you root for the team that's less favored, the team that has more to overcome. And that was that case. But here, there's a clear priority, which is thou shalt not get San Francisco a Super Bowl title. Thou shalt not let the 49ers win another title. And in that regard, I felt very good that at least we're not relying on Mike Vrabel and Ryan Tannehill to keep the 49ers from a fifth Super Bowl.
100%. And they were not going to get it done. They just weren't. This Titans run was impressive in that they were able to beat two teams that have been AFC powerhouses for years and years, and they did both of them on the road, and they did both of them with limitations, severe ones at quarterback. But as soon, I mean, Tennessee had to play a perfect game against Kansas City to win, and even as soon as you saw Kansas City take that first lead, everyone thought that game was over, and you should have thought that. Tennessee just does not have the capability to play from behind. As soon as it turns into a game where your quarterback is to be relied upon, no offense to Ryan Tannehill, but he's just not good enough. And we saw that in this game. And yeah, Kansas City, I mean, this is a team that can – you could fall in a hole the same way that they fell in a hole against the Packers fell in a hole against the 49ers in the first half. I think Kansas City could pull themselves out of a 27-0 first half hole. I think they are that scary on offense. Maybe it will be a little bit more difficult to do against a San Francisco defense, and I'm really intrigued by the idea of Patrick Mahomes and his mobility against this 49ers pass rush. I'm really curious as to how it goes, but I feel like Kansas City is never out of a game. You could be up 35 points. Good luck. They could come back in a heartbeat.
You know what's too bad? It's too bad that we stopped doing power rankings in the playoffs. And I know why we stopped doing it, which is that the whole point of the power ranking is to give people an idea of where teams stack up pointed toward the playoffs. But in some respects, a final power rankings is a really interesting idea. Kansas City, if you take Kansas City and San Francisco and say they're the top two teams because they're in the Super Bowl, that's fair. What would your other five teams in a power ranking right now? And you can text in 710-710. That's brought to you by Coors Light. And our playoff coverage here is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. That's every day here during the NFL playoffs. Where does Seattle rank? Does Seattle make the top five? Baltimore, in spite of that victory, or in spite of their loss, in spite of getting beat by Tennessee, I would still think that,
I agree,
that Baltimore's got to be in the top five. In fact, I'd probably put them third. They had some turnovers. They had a couple of unexpected or unpredictable fourth down stops that led to that. Of all the different outcomes, I felt that was most attributable to sort of, yeah, I think that Baltimore made the right decisions. Those decisions just ended up biting them in the butt. They got stopped on fourth and one twice in that game.
Yeah.
And that's not fluky, and it's not, but at the same time, it's like, man, that had been something they were really good at. They turned the ball over. I didn't think Lamar Jackson played terrible, but he did have some turnovers. I think Baltimore is probably my fourth team.
New Orleans, I think, has to be four, and I'm with you on Baltimore being three. I know New Orleans had the ugly loss to the Vikings, but at the very least, it was a close game all the way. It did go to overtime. It just wasn't New Orleans' best day at the office. I think if they play each other in a seven-game series, I think New Orleans wins like five. So I think New Orleans is four. After that, it's totally subjective. I don't know who I would put as number five. I suppose because I covered the Seahawks, it would be easier, but it's just hard for me to definitively do that with all the injuries that they were playing with at the end of the year. And, man, it's weird to think this way, but, I mean, with what Tennessee did, don't you have to put them at five just given what they were able to accomplish in these playoffs? And it's never like they, you know, for all things considered, like even though once the Chiefs took the lead, that game was done, they were hovering in it even though the game was well in hand, and they did a decent enough job of at the very least not getting blown out by Kansas City. So, yeah, I think I'd put Tennessee over Seattle with what Tennessee was able to do in these playoffs.
Where'd you rate Green Bay and Seattle? Green Bay gets the head-to-head and the better regular season record.
I still put Seattle like definitively ahead of Green Bay.
I think I do, too, because of the injuries, because of how close that game was, and because we saw Green Bay twice get smoked by San Francisco.
Right.
And we saw Seattle twice stand toe-to-toe with the San Francisco 49ers.
San Francisco is the only tough team Green Bay played all season long, and they got trounced by them twice.
Just a wallop.
That's what happens when you're in the MAC.
Is this why we don't let teams from outside the Power 5 get into the BCS?
Yes, exactly. Because this is what happens. This is what happens when Bowling Green makes it to the conference championship game.
Well, sometimes Chris Peterson gets there and runs a Statue of Liberty play, though, and then there's a running back that's proposing to a cheerleader on the sidelines. That definitely did not happen. Minnesota gets some credit, right? Like, Minnesota, was Minnesota, the analytics people will tell you that Minnesota was a better team than Green Bay, and they'll say, I don't even want to hear about the head-to-head meetings in the regular season.
It's hard not
statistically. And you look at it that Minnesota and Green Bay got similarly smashed. If anything, Minnesota acquitted itself a little bit better than Green Bay, which was done at halftime. And that game was complete. Once the 49ers scored, just simply scored in the second half, you're like, okay, that's pretty much done. It's now going to take an act of the almighty for Green Bay to be able to win this game.
Minnesota did have a pulse for a little bit against San Francisco, and it felt like maybe they were a little bit worn out by the fact that they had, what, like 5 days, I think, to actually prepare for that game against the 49ers. It was a short week. So I actually can go with the idea that the Vikings were better. The problem is Kirk Cousins. Like, even mediocre Aaron Rodgers, I have a hard time saying, yeah, I'm going to take Kirk Cousins over Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs. This is hard to do.
Kirk Cousins was definitively better in the regular season and in the playoffs than Aaron Rodgers was.
I hate to bump on Kirk Cousins because I think he does deserve some credit for this season, but he's still Kirk Cousins. I just cannot get out that bias out of my eyes, out of my mind, out of my heart. It is just always going to be there with Kirky.
Do you think Kirk Cousins is one of the 10 best starting quarterbacks in the NFL?
No, I think he's like 14th.
Really?
I think he's like 14th, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's...
Where do you have Rodgers then?
Probably in that same area, like that 13, 12, something like that. I don't think it's that big of a gap, but it's still.
I think Rodgers over Cousins. I honestly believe if you sat and listed all your... It would not follow numerical order. You would have like four good quarterbacks, and then it would jump immediately to 13. Like, you would have nobody else
in the
top 10.
Well, that's how I do my ranking sometimes, is I actually will just skip numbers, because it's just based... It's not based off of math or logic. It's based off of my heart.
At least we're honest about that
part.
It is Danny and Gallant, and it's time for us to take a tour around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
J. Jess.
It's a busy Monday.
It is.
It is.
We got somebody named Snow named, is he a defensive coordinator John in Carolina? Smith?
John Snow out of.
No. He's Phil Snow.
He's a bastard.
Phil Snow of the North. Phil Snow has been hired to be the Panthers' new defensive coordinator. He was previously held the same position at Baylor.
Okay. I'll say this. If Jon Snow was a defensive coordinator, he would look perpetually aggrieved. It would look like his... He would look a lot like Mike Pettin yesterday, where it's just constantly overwhelmed and like, oh my God, here come the White Walkers. We're getting trounced. I have no idea about Phil Snow.
If Jon Snow was offensive coordinator, people would be calling for his head all the time like he's Brian Schottenheimer, because if there's one thing that we can all agree on, it's that Jon Snow was just completely over his head as a leader. He would always do the absolute worst wrong thing because he thought it was the noble thing to do, and he got bailed out by luck every single time.
He learned nothing from Ned Stark.
It's very true.
He knows nothing, Jon Snow.
Nothing.
All right. And the bad news for defensive coordinators, the Houston Texans have decided to part ways with Romeo Crennel.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? And who is it? Some guy named Weaver?
It's not going to work here.
Anthony
anymore.
Weaver, yes. Anthony Weaver's been highly thought of in the Texans organization for a little bit of time, and I think that it was the natural way to go about things to move on from Romeo Crennel. But hearing that the Texans also moved on from one of the guys that's part of their organizational structure, specifically like in that general manager area, Chris Olsen, so that Bill O'Brien can, quote, solidify, end quote, power. If you're a Texans fan, how can you read that and feel good about that? O'Brien is continuing to solidify power after a, wretched last three quarters against Kansas City.
What is the difference between Bill O'Brien and Marvin Lewis? And Bill's won a couple more playoff games.
Bill's angrier.
Yeah. And honestly, like the idea, Adam Gase is probably the best example of falling up that we have in the NFL. Bill O'Brien is not too far behind. His job security should be getting more and more tenuous, and it seems to be getting more and more. He seems to accumulate more power the closer it gets to being clear that he's not the guy to get you over the top.
And I wonder, what is the pelt on the wall that O'Brien has? Because I remember it wasn't like he was doing a whole lot while he was with New England. At least Marvin Lewis was the architect of one of the best defenses that we've seen in the last 20 years in the Baltimore Ravens 2000 championship defense.
I figured it out. I know what happened.
What is it?
He was called in, and they were going to fire him. He was told he was going to fire. He lost his mind. He threatened the owner, and the owner cowered and decided he didn't want to get beat up. And so Bill O'Brien, through sheer velocity and power of his temper, has able to accumulate more power because nobody's willing to stand up to him in that room.
Unlimited power!
Tom Brady, the golden child of the NFL, technically without a home, and he says that things are open.
I'm open-minded about the process. You know, at the same time, I love playing football, and I want to continue to play and do a great job. So I'm looking forward to what's ahead. Whatever the future may bring, I'll embrace it with open arms.
Nice non-answer, Tom.
Where's he going to go? I mean, honestly, do you think that he'll leave New England? It's hard for me to imagine that it's going to get to the point that he leaves New England.
I have a hard time thinking that he would be able to deal with other organizations. I just don't think, like Los Angeles and Anthony Lynn. It's a step down from Belichick. I suppose maybe he could talk himself into John Gruden and the Raiders, but does Tom Brady...
He was photographed with Mark Davis over the weekend at the Conor McGregor fight.
Fashion icon Tom Brady should just look at Mark Davis's haircut and know everything that he needs to know about the Oakland Raiders. That man travels hundreds of miles to get that haircut. Sorry, that is a bad investment, and that is a person that is not of similar mindset to look his best and live his best life.
He pays a lot of money for that haircut, though.
Yeah.
That's up Tom's alley.
Yeah, he also has a conversion van with a TV with the VCR in it. That was one of the best details from, I think it was Tim Cowan's
story
about him. Like, the conversion van with the TV and the VCR, which I miss those. I miss the VCR hooked up to the TV.
Frank Clark was pretty fired up after yesterday's game.
Past two games, he's gained 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we weren't going to win the game if we let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards, they call him the best rusher in the league. We're sitting in this home early.
I posted the comments that you said to me. And all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't cash. Ooh. Everybody on social media said,
they must not know who I am yet. They gonna find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that's the KC. KC, ain't no fall off. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told him when I got here, this is gonna change. Look at the we're the best in the world.
Go Joy.
I loved it.
Yeah. It's a most. I'd probably like it. He needed, first of all, it was James Palmer.
NFL
he needs
Network.
To give the who was talking about you.
Like Aaron Andrews.
Yeah, he needed to get who was talking about you.
But he laid it out. Who was talking about him? And for those who don't know, Clark had said that Derrick Henry isn't that tough to tackle in a one-on-one that he had with James Palmer. And you know what? To his credit, he did back it up. The Chiefs defense did back it up, and I did not think they'd be able to.
Who was talking about you?
George Kittle, kind of likable.
Feels great, baby. God, got it that time. Good job.
Explain the shirt.
Oh, no. So you remember Jimmy had a t-shirt with my face in his locker, and he told everyone I sent it to him. I got this in my locker the same day. I just didn't show you guys because I was saving it for a special occasion. So I think it's pretty good. He even signed it.
That was shirtless Jimmy Garoppolo that he got signed, George Kittle. Feels Great Baby is a reference to what? An interview earlier this year with Aaron Andrews and Jimmy G?
Yes.
Which, the whole thing, George Kittle's kind of likable.
Kind of. I think George, look, I know he's on the 49ers. I love George Kittle. He blocks. He doesn't want to be tackled. He fights for every single yard.
Okay, now I don't like him anymore. I don't want to hear anything good about him. I don't want to hear. Fine. Oh, Paul loves George Kittle. Thinks George Kittle's
just great. I do love
George
Kittle.
He drives me nuts. Yeah, whatever.
I have to look at those things objectively because I know I'd love him if he was on my team. And yeah. I'm like, oh, shoot.
That's too bad. He should have been on a different team.
Gosh darn it.
It's unfortunate.
I like him.
But don't root for 49ers. Don't let friends root for 49ers.
That's fair. That's a fair way of looking at it. Look, he could be Travis Kelce. He could be significantly worse.
Here's how bad it was yesterday, is that even my attempts to taunt and rile up my high school friends, who are all that negligible strain of the species known as Niner fans, was completely unsatisfactory. Like, I gave them some sort of, like, you guys know this wouldn't happen if Russell Wilson was there, right? Like, you know how grateful you were. And I didn't even get the satisfaction of, like, a good counter argument. It was like, yeah, nobody likes hearing you bitter like that. Like, I got patronized. They were so happy I couldn't even rile them up. It was awful.
Yeah, there's no way to really go about it, to talk trash to your friends when you're watching their team succeed. There's no way to do it. You have to wait until they lose to pounce.
Yeah.
And be that petty person.
You gotta slink away for the meantime.
No, you can tell them that, huh, it's interesting that I didn't hear anything from you guys for the past 5 years. And now all of a sudden you're like, we're back. It's like we never left. It was like, well, it was like you left because you weren't in the playoffs for 5 straight years. Like, you know how yesterday was the 6-year anniversary of the Sherman game? Well, you know what? You didn't go to the playoffs in the interim, and probably you'd get a lot of good talent if you continuously draft in the top 10. But, oh, yeah, we're going back to where we belong when you haven't won a title since 1995.
You are Richard Sherman. I like it.
Oh, no, I just don't like the 49ers. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll find out what else we learned from the weekend's conference championship games. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Feel a little left out. The NFL had a party and we're on the outsides, noses pressed up against the glass, thinking, oh, it would have been fun to be in there, and I haven't been in there in a while. It was the fact that it was the 6-year anniversary from the victory over the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC Championship game.
Man, it's probably even six. Wow.
Added a little bit of not salt to it, but man. It's the threshold that Seattle hasn't been able to quite get back to. I do feel that they got closer this year. I do feel that they're closer than a year before. I think my question is it a significant step that's next, or is it a natural progression? Are they on the path there, or do they need something to happen to goose them, to get them up, to get them to that next level where they're competing with San Francisco and with Kansas City, and they can be in the Super Bowl next season?
they need to get more out of their last two draft classes. And if you look back at the draft classes that they had, 2016 and 2017 in particular, which was just a bad draft. You had six picks in the first three rounds. None of them were first-rounders, and only one, Shaquille Griffin, has really done anything. Malik McDowell, Ethan Pojic, Lano Hill, Amara Darbo, and Tedrick Thompson in the fourth round as well. Like, you just didn't get enough out of those players. So you need, out of this next season, Marquise Blair, Cody Barton, and LJ Collier to take that step forward, because that's how you get to a position like the 49ers are in. Your young players develop, and it's unfortunate for the Seahawks that while the 49ers have been missing all of these parties, they have been slowly building up in kegs with Nick Bosa and
DeForest Buckner.
DeForest Buckner, yeah. I don't know why I said buckwheat. No, that's wrong. But they've loaded up on young top 10 talent on the defensive line. The Seahawks need their young talent to turn into something quickly. And another draft where they have three picks in the first two rounds this coming April, well, maybe there's a chance they can add some pieces. But really, the 2019 and 2018 draft classes, Rasheem Greens, Shaquem Griffins, Trey Flowers, and the three that I mentioned from this past year, Marquise Blair, Cody Barton, LJ Collier, you need a step forward from those guys. Because if you don't have it, you're probably not going to take the big step forward that you would like.
I'm honestly encouraged by the last two draft classes. That 2017 draft, that one sticks out as especially painful. And some of it is not Seattle's fault. Malik McDowell suffering what appears to be a life-altering injury in an ATV accident. That's not something the Seahawks could have foreseen. But they've had a number of other guys. And honestly, lump that together with the 2016 draft, and you've had guys that they have spent relatively high picks on, guys that you would expect to mature and become rank-and-file contributors that simply haven't.
Right.
And it's just, whether it's Reese Odhiambo, whether it's Amara Darbo, who really didn't pan out to do anything at all for your team, the different guys, Ethan Posick, who he's played some, he hasn't been overwhelming, and this year
ended up on
injured reserve twice. You haven't gotten those breakthrough players, and I think where you've especially seen that is on the defense. Like they have not identified and developed that next generation of stars. And it's not that they need to replicate Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, but you need at least a couple of those guys to come through. You need a couple of difference makers, and they really haven't got that. We think that Shaquille Griffin has taken a step forward. I'm encouraged by the last two draft classes. I think Rasheem Green is projecting and developing well. I think Trey Flowers, while he had difficulties this season, I'm certainly not to the point where I think that, oh, that's a bust. The guy's a fifth round pick, and he could take a step next year that Shaquille Griffin took this year. But I also think, and here's the, whenever anybody mentions the salary cap space Seattle has, I get very, very worried, because in the NFL, you do not often buy your way into competitiveness. You do not, guys, teams, and you look back at year after year, teams that sign the biggest name free agents do not tend to be the ones that take the huge step forward next year. Usually it's GMs who are trying to impress their owners and know that they need this to work because they don't have time to wait for their draft picks to develop. And we'll see if Seattle gets some of that development from their draft picks over these past few years, but it doesn't usually work when you have to buy your way into relevance.
It doesn't usually, but when you have a solid offense and you build by adding defensive talent, we saw the 2014 offseason where the Denver Broncos signed TJ Ward, where they signed DeMarcus Ware, and there's another name off the top of my head that I'm forgetting, but they added some talent on the defensive side of things, and that talent led to them winning the Super Bowl the year after just getting absolutely trounced by the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
Wasn't it the guy that ends up running around firing bullets in the air, Aqib Talib?
Aqib Talib, yes. Yes.
Was he part of that?
He was a part of it.
Yes. You can. That's kind of also, I wouldn't be against this. I wouldn't be against sort of shooting the moon to try and say you've got to make the most of your quarterback. That was also a half-court heave with Peyton Manning and saying we've only got a year or two of him left. We might as well put all that money. The reason Denver is in the rebuilding spot it's in now is because they promised all that money to all of those veteran players. And that tends to be the recipe of why your team goes off the cliff. is that you overpay to get in veterans who might be good year one, slip off year two, and by year three are no longer relevant.
Right.
And I'm not against that. If you think that you can get back to the Super Bowl with defensive talent that's out there, absolutely do it and say we'll see what the consequences are 3 or 4 years from now, because you don't want to stay kind of high centered at this spot where you're good enough to get in the playoffs and not good enough to be an actual threat in the playoffs.
That's true. I look at what they. I'm going to look at another team that also had the similar kind of offseason spending spree, and I'm just spitballing right now because I think that defensively maybe you can go crazy in the offseason. The Rams, the 2018 offseason leading up to their eventual Super Bowl appearance, and you see the situation that they're in right now, but they bring Marcus Peters in. They also bring in Aqib Talib. Maybe that's the key. Find Aqib Talib. Bring in Aqib Talib.
He's available, right? Didn't he get traded? Did he get traded to Tampa Bay?
They
just agreed to take on his salary and
Miami.
He didn't have to show up for work. Oh, it was Miami. My bad.
Right.
The team that was actually cashing checks and like, hey, here, take him for a little while and just pay him. You don't even have to come to work.
It might be funny to see him here. Ndamukong Suh, they brought in that offseason. They gave Aaron Donald the big extension, and they also traded for Brandon Cooks, too, to give themselves some speed on the offensive side, in addition to giving a bunch of guys contract extensions. They were very aggressive, and it did defensively make them better, and it did defensively help them get to a Super Bowl, and it did defensively help them do their job in the Super Bowl. The problem was on the offensive side of things, they didn't have it. So that 2015 Broncos championship didn't have the offense, but they made some defensive splashes off in the offseason, and guess what they got? A title. The Rams were close. It's theoretically possible, but if you do that, if you decide, you know what, we're going to go all in on this 1 year, and we're going to bring in a ton of guys in free agency, there's a very good chance that that is the one shot. And then after that, it is going to be a whole lot of what the Rams are doing right now, what the Broncos have been doing afterwards, reshuffling and trying to figure out ways to keep your core guys, but in along the way, cutting some very important pieces too. And it's tough decisions when you have to make those.
It's the equivalent of using a credit card. Like that's in real life terms, it's buying a bunch of stuff you don't have the money for right now. And it means that you're going to do without in the very near future, but you're going to hope that it pays off in the short term. It's how teams, and it's why teams end up having to go through rebuilding periods where, okay, it's time to pay the piper. We can't do anything extra for a while. No meals out. No vacations. We're going to have to buckle down and pay down our debt, and hopefully we can start having fun again in a couple years. I don't think that Seattle's at that point, but I think there are some questions about how do you vault yourselves up? How do you get across that next barrier, which, quite honestly, the Seahawks have been high-centered at over the past 5 years? They haven't been able to get past the point we just saw them lose at, which is they're good enough to get into the playoffs. They're good enough to maybe even win a game. They're just not good enough to get to that next rung and be a game away from the Super Bowl. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to review everything that happened today and then set the table for John Clayton. That's all ahead next.
And flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
This is that time of the show. We gathered together in consultation, Tony Corrente style, who has apparently inherited Ed Hockley's mantle as the most talkative official who loves to over-explain everything.
I like it when they explain things that don't need explanation.
Yes.
We did not throw a flag there because
Hockley was the king of that. Here's why what you might have been thinking should have been called wasn't called, which at the time would annoy me, but now I guess I kind of almost appreciate.
I miss it.
Yeah, I kind of miss Hockley.
I miss his guns. I miss his explanations of when he screwed up, because those were perhaps the best ones. Like, for example, that fumble that should have been called a fumble that was accidentally, inadvertently ruled an incomplete pass in a Chargers game. And he explains it for about 20 seconds, and the crowd just increases in volume, booing and booing and booing. It's magical.
I will say this, that listening to an official try to explain away mistakes. I just wish they'd hire Jeff Triplett, who retired, as the replay review official for one of the networks, so they could go to him and he'd be asleep. He'd be like, what? Huh? That guy was the worst.
Wasn't he? I think he actually had a test run. He was on ESPN, wasn't he?
Oh, was he?
I think he, yeah, which goes to show you
Yeah, he was on the Monday Night Football broadcast team last year. So he was replaced by John Perry.
Oh. Triplet slept through his last 5 years of being an active official. Anyway, let's get to the actual flags. Jess, would you like to start us off?
Sure. I'll be petty and I'll throw a flag at Aaron Rodgers. But I'm going to bring you back after he was drafted. Remember, he was like the original green room guy because he fell so far in the first round of the draft. I think, anyway, this is what he had to say following that.
How disappointed are you that you will not be a 49er?
Not as disappointed as the 49ers will be that they didn't draft me.
Jimmy G has something to say about that.
As did Alex Smith.
Good point.
That was a pretty good quarterback draft. Usually when you get, like, there's two quarterbacks, and there were two that year. It was Smith and Rodgers. Usually one of them's terrible.
Right.
Like, they were both pretty good, and Rodgers was really good.
When Smith actually had a competent coaching staff with him, he became a pretty good quarterback. And I do wonder what Smith could have potentially become had he had a better coaching staff early on in his career. Because he became a high-end game manager, but he did get the 49ers to an NFC Championship game, and if not for a muffed punt in the NFC Championship game against the New York Giants, they very well could have been playing against the New England Patriots in that Super Bowl.
In an alternate reality, there is a situation that plays out where Alex Smith became the quarterback here. It could have happened, and it was right after that point because there was uncertain whether the 49ers were going to recommit to him, and it was possible that Alex Smith would have ended up coming here. He ended up going back and staying with the 49ers and then being replaced by Kaepernick. But of all of the different scenarios, that one was closer to happening than them getting Peyton Manning, who didn't want to talk to him. Lydia, do you have any flags to throw this fine morning?
I will raise a flag. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so just want to raise a flag for him and also just the message. I had the opportunity to go to the National Civil Rights Museum about a year ago with my mom. We were actually in town to see in Memphis to see some minor league baseball because that's our style, but also we're able to go to the National Civil Rights Museum, which of course is on the site of where Martin Luther King was assassinated, and it's one of the most emotional, stirring things I've ever done, so I highly recommend everyone do it. They just had a cool talk this weekend where they talked about the intersection of sports and race. They had like Grant Hill, Cheryl Swoops, Doug Williams there. They're always having cool events, so I highly recommend that if you ever get a chance to visit Memphis.
Great flag raise, as always. He might be the most courageous American in our country's history with what he was able to do.
Pretty remarkable. And that museum in Memphis, there were two things that I really love seeing in Memphis, and that was probably one of the most moving. I've also been to the church where he started preaching in Atlanta, which was also incredible. But that Memphis, where that is absolutely fantastic. Jessamine. We've got Jessamines. Now let's go to Paul.
Okay, well, real quick, here's a fun flag to throw at Jeff Triplett. Jeff Triplett actually blinded a player. He blinded Orlando Brown with an errant flag that he threw. So Jeff Triplett, honestly, the guy has not really done a whole lot well on the NFL side of things. I'm going to throw a flag at notorious tryhard Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce so badly wants to be Rob Gronkowski. He might even want to be George Kittle. He is not authentic at all, and if you need some proof of that, here is him handling the Chiefs' coronation as AFC champions.
I'll tell you what, it's been 7 years coming, baby. I learned one thing since I've been here. You gotta fight for your life!
Notice
it from here.
Yeah, that is it from here. That's it for Travis Kelce. Notice he did that like 100% sober too. That was what he came up.
You think the Beastie Boys are offended?
Yes.
Like, just please, no, don't.
Honestly, it was so cringeworthy.
It really was. The Beastie Boys don't want to be attached to that.
From up above, MCA rains down like, hey, dude, you don't speak for me. His intruding on the post game interview with Mahomes was, it was very on brand for him. Like, hey, look at me, everybody. My flag is going to be thrown at the NFL broadcasters for making a decision that we're not going to see replay reviews anymore. Fix this. It's the one time that we actually want to hear input about the officiating. We're now subject to analysts in the booth, whether it's Mike Pereira, Gene Steratore, or is it Terry McCauley, who I really like, the guy on Sunday Night Football. that's the one point where we actually want to see it. And instead, it just comes back. And we're like, well, here's what they decided. It's like, I'd actually like to see that. That's the part I want to see. I feel very demanding.
Yeah, Danny.
I think you're right, though. It's very bizarre that they just decide that you're not going to show that when they have so much money being paid to these NFL rules analysts. What's the point? Get your money's worth.
It is. That is going to do it for us. We are going to turn it over to the professor, John Clayton. Our thanks to Lydia and Jessamine, who keep us on the straight and narrow forever and always. He's Paul Gallant. I'm Danny O'Neill.
Yeah. And look, am I supposed to come up with a closing line? That's not fair.
Yeah,
just pause.
That is true. That is a true
statement.
What am I
supposed to say?
It was great.
Bye. Okay, bye. Go away. Just kidding. Stay for John.
It was just so much fun.